Hi, Mike Ladd with you again on ABC Radio National. Welcome to Poetica. Today we're meeting Lucy English, a novelist and performance poet from Bristol in the UK. Lucy was born in Sri Lanka but grew up in England. She has an MA from Bath Spa University, where she's currently a senior lecturer in creative writing. Lucy has published three novels but is perhaps best known as a performance poet. As you'll discover today, it's not only what she writes about but how she voices her poetry that's so engaging. In this program, which comes with a language warning, Lucy English reads her poetry and speaks to Anna Messeriti about her work.
The city. Take me to the city, because the city is dying like an old man alone on the sixth floor. And I can hear him next door breathing. Was that the balloons going over? And I can hear him next door coughing. Was that the cars starting up? I used to see him in the cafe opposite the tower blocks. We never spoke. He poured whiskey in his tea, staring at his bacon sandwich. His face was grey, and he looked up and leered. Brown teeth. I wore a black plastic jumpsuit. I unzipped it, but I was too expensive. I walked to Tesco's, where the motorway meets the river. Above my head, one stream flowing on concrete pillars, the other beneath my feet, black and weed-logged like a sewer. At least the brambles were still growing. I wore nothing but my fear of forgotten places, where buddleia grows on walls and willow herb grows rank beside the rubbish bags, the smell of water and one shoe. Why always one shoe? I do not know the stories of these places, houses with steel curtains and bricked-up doors, and sparrows fly through the roof, through missing tiles, so many empty buildings. Take me to the city, because the city is heaving like lovers on hot nights stuck with sweat and other bodily secretions. And I should be touched by a lover's hands, because my hair is Lee Woods, and my face is the downs with bumps and pits, and my neck is the football pitch, and my breasts are the trendy drinking dens down White Ladies Road, and my belly is Broadmead. Unstructured and in need of a refit. And here is Bedminster, where the slippery river runs and fig trees grow by the sides, and my knees must be Totterdown, raised up high, and I suppose my toes are Whitchurch. Take me to the city, because the city is ready to give birth now, stretched open now and panting. Who? And it's ready. Push, and it's coming, yes. A new city, with perfect tiny shops and people. It's just like its mother, and it's here to amuse us. Ah, cute baby cities. There's a new one every week pushed out. There's one down my street with a car park. There's one down the bottom of my garden, looks like the galleries. There's one in my matchbox, so small you can't see it. Cellular cities, each one bustling with impulses, dying, splitting, dividing, growing, giving birth to another one. So many rows of babies, with white faces and red, open mouths wailing, and each one waiting to be fed. I came to poetry quite late. My first form of writing was as a fiction writer. I read short stories and novels. And when I did an MA in creative writing at Bath Spa University, what I concentrated on most was the fiction writing. And I wrote a novel that became my first published novel, which was Selfish People. And poetry sort of came a bit later, really. Although I loved reading poetry, I never really felt that I could write it until I actually went to a performance poetry evening where I saw performance poets doing their poetry at a poetry slam. And I thought, oh, this is fun. I really, really enjoy this. This sort of public, noisy type of poetry. And after that, I thought, yeah, I want to do that. I want to write poetry. I want to go in for a poetry slam. I want to have a go at being a performance poet. So I went in for a poetry slam the following month. And to my complete surprise, I won it. I'd never been to poetry slam before. I'd never actually performed at poetry slam before. And ever since then, I've been asked to go to various different events to read poetry. So my main bulk of poetry is actually poetry for performance. And I do love poetry being read aloud. I love to hear a poet's voice. And I love the visual impact of seeing somebody on stage reading poetry. And that's what inspires me. For me, poetry isn't something flat on a page. It's actually something rather large and dynamic. Having said that, my next poem actually is more of a pagey poem. And it comes out of that children's game, which is Paper, Scissors, Stone. Smooth me out so plain and white, and write on me a poem, a shopping list. Crease me, fold me, mould me, scribble on me or paint, stick me on your wall. Call me art. Call me wallpaper. Tear me up. Discard me. Burn me. I'm sharper than you think and jealous. I'll snip off your hair and cut off your best shirt and love letters, and I'll cut you. I watch you bleeding. I rise to mountains and fall down oceans. Fear me. I'm under your fields and streets. Make caves and houses live in me. I'm your temples. Hold your williams. I am the effigy. Worship me. I suppose also, of course, that poem is about being female. I'm a female poet. I'm very aware that what I write about is sort of female experiences and experiences that are very much connected to my life. I don't think my life is terribly interesting, but, you know, the things that have happened to me in my life, I think have happened to other people as well. I've been married, I've had children, I got divorced, I've had relationships, they fell apart. I mean, all this sort of territory other women have experienced. I write about this sort of things. I write about what it's like to be a female, what it's like to have relationships falling apart, what it's like to be abandoned, all these type of things. And this next poem, The Last Days of the Old Year, was written about 6 years ago after a particularly upsetting breakup. It's the last days of the old year, and I'm sitting here watching the rain fall on the brown rooftops, looking towards the city, hiding in a mist like a future I can't quite see yet. This time last year I had so much optimism, but all I feel now is your absence. The child I never had and never will, all gone, like the rain pouring down the garden under the fence you painted. You spent all day in the rain, laying the patio. You put so much energy into this house, your home. Our home. It's strange what I remember. Hairs in the sink, I kept picking them out. Your shoes as big as boats by the front door. A green jacket in the hallway. And the food you ate. Organic rice, tofu, noodles, Chinese fungus, miso, seaweed, peppermint cheese, soy milk. It was healthy. I grew plump on it. Your plump bird in a velvet dress, folding up your boxes like a true gemütlicher housewife. I planted herbs and flowers. Happy, plump and fertile. So I thought. It's strange what I remember. Teas in Portishead. Country walks. Did we spend all our weekends walking through fields in the sunshine? Cathedrals and castles, lonely beaches in Northumberland. It felt that when we were out walking, we were the kings and queens of fairyland. And time slowed down to let us pass. It felt that what we had was a glimpse of perfection. And it never rained. It's raining now. Sheets of it. The clouds are crying on this house. This garden. You, lying on the floor and crying. I've never seen anybody cry so much as you. Crying for the baby we never had and the relationship draining around us. It's the last days of the old year. And I'm sitting here, watching the rain fall on the brown rooftops, looking towards the city, hiding in the mist like a future I can't quite see yet. And like Orpheus, walking out of the underworld, I know I mustn't look back. But I just have. So now I am alone. And I shall walk the streets at night alone. And I shall brush my teeth at night alone. And I shall sleep on my side of the bed alone. Because inside, I am alone, and you asleep with your new woman up the other end of town. Inside, I know you are alone. I think for a lot of people, they turn to poetry in places of high emotion. Certainly in the UK, the practice of reading poems out at funerals is becoming more popular. People turn to poetry in states of high emotion. And I think the challenge as a poet is to turn that emotion into something that isn't just like a private journal, but into something that is structured and that can actually become a poem. I mean, a poem is a structured piece of writing. It isn't just an outpouring of feelings, even though you can use those particular emotions to create poems. That last poem, written in a time of despair, which I'm pleased to say is over now. I live with my current partner. We're very happy, as people are. I do have three children. They're grown up now. So that time of despair is over. So the next poem is much more a poem of celebration. And again, it's about my hometown, Bristol. This is about a very particular place in Bristol. It's very near where I live. And there's this telephone box that's just stuck up a hill, sort of. I don't even know why it's there, but it's just this lovely little landmark, and it's called the telephone box up Ashley Hill. There's a telephone box up Ashley Hill where I go and stand sometimes when I'm feeling down. Because from up there I can see the allotments sloping towards the terraced grid of houses in St. Werburgh's and the streets of Easton, Eastfield and beyond, the first fields outside Bath, and the ridge of hills reminding me that the city isn't endless. However stuck and messed up I feel, when I stand there, I know there are places I haven't been to yet, and people I don't know at all are waiting for me, as surely as the clump of trees up Kelston Hill. There's a telephone box up Ashley Hill, where I go and stand sometimes when I'm feeling down. Because I've been in the rain up there, when the rain dripped off my nose and the hills disappeared in the clouds. And I've been in the sun up there, watching the heat rise off the dusty city. And I've seen the view, so winter white, the curving hills like frosted crystal. And I've been drunk up there, watching the stars slide around the sky. And I've tripped up there, going to the moon with a 10-pence piece. And I've been up there with lovers kissing passionately, banging against the phone box. We'll just hold hands in silence and watch the sky grow red with sunsets. And once, and only once, I landed up in the nettles in a dope-fueled tangle of lust. Don't try it. I had a rash for days. And a long time ago, I took a little boy up there, and we hung onto the railings, our coats flapping in the wind, the spring wind pressing our eyeballs tight, and I shouted, "Look! Look at the view!" And he looked, a solemn old man, 4-year-old, and said, "The sky is very big. There's a telephone box up Ashley Hill, where I go and stand sometimes when I'm feeling down, to look at the view and the big sky." In 2005, I was given a commission by the Arts Council in conjunction with Apples and Snakes, a poetry organisation in the UK, to work with 4 other poets, and we all had to choose the theme of temptation to write poems about. Here am I, you know, I'm a woman in my very late 40s. What tempts me? I thought about this. I thought about all the usual things, sort of young men, chocolates, holidays, all these sort of things. And then I realised that actually what I am constantly tempted by, I've never actually been a totally confident person, but as I get older, I find it's easier for me to say what I really think about things. And this poem's about that. It's a slam piece. It's a noisy poem. Let's imagine when you're hearing this poem that you're in some noisy cafe or bar and I'm up on the stage, because that's the sort of territory of this sort of poem. Being sweet and charming, uncomplaining, undemanding. I want to tell it how it is. I want to be a bitch. I want to say to my best friend, "You look awful in that dress, like a bag of potatoes with a ribbon tied round. And you need to lose weight, about 3 stone, and that husband of yours is a pompous bore and is having an affair with your sister, I promise not to say, and she's pregnant. And by the way, your children are ugly and not too bright. And can you please stop talking about them all the time? All right? And I want to say to my mum, shut up. Shut up talking about curtains. That nice bit of stuff you found in the marketplace will make a nice cushion. And in the high street, they've just opened up a nice new boutique that sells Jack Vet. I do not care. And I do not care about Mrs. Watts's eldest daughter, Clara, did so well and now she's married to a doctor. Mum, can you please say something that's interesting? Like, what do you think about global warming and poverty in America? And do you think you've got dementia? And I say to my dad, stop giving me tomato plants. They always die. And yes, I do know that if I took the second turning of the B31106, I'd get there 20 minutes earlier. And no, I don't want a very useful book on how to mend my fridge. And yes, I do know how to download my photographs. And Dad, why have you not hugged me since I first grew breasts? And why don't you go and see a therapist? I want to say to my daughter, stop showing me your scribbly drawings. You have no talent, none whatsoever. But that won't stop you getting into art school. So why don't you go now and stop bothering me with your latest, "Do you think he fancies me, but I think he fancies my mate Lisa." Darling, can you please grow up? I mean, you are 19. Is there nothing in your head apart from mobile phones and celebrity must-haves? And can you please learn to live on what you earn rather than buying handbags? Why don't you go backpacking to Thailand or Goa? Why don't you go anywhere but here? And I want to say to my son, hello, hello, hello. Is anybody in there apart from MP3s and Tomb Raider level 6? And have you, forgotten how to have a conversation with somebody, like whatever? And you smell, I mean really bad, like last month's cheese. And can you look at me instead of at your feet and take that bloody woolly hat off, please? And I want to say to my partner, just do it. Just go and buy a Harley and black leathers and work out your midlife crisis. I know, your job's a bore, you're out of shape, you don't know where it's all going. So why don't you fuck off to Bali and go and find some 22-year-old who's drugged up enough to want to sleep with you and go swimming naked in the sea and fry your brains with ecstasy. And I want to look in the mirror and say to myself, what are you doing? What are you? A one-woman cooking, cleaning, washing, counselling machine. What are you? Fabulous at 40? I don't think so. You underpaid and overweight. Has it really come to this, the £10 you spent on a top in TK Maxx to make you feel young? And what's worse, you'll never wear it. Why don't you just go down the station and take the next train out? Why don't you find out what you want? Why don't you do all the things you said you would, like learn Spanish, live in Prague, climb Scarfell Pike, wear red trousers and a quirky hat, shout more, tell it how it is. I'm going to like being a bitch. This next poem is one of the ones I've written quite recently. It may be because I'm getting older, and it may be because I've lived in Bristol for 22 years, but sometimes I feel while I'm going around Bristol that I'm sort of confronting layers and layers of my own life. That I may go to a particular place and it may be that I've got, you know, sort of 22 years of memory connected with that particular place. And that's very much the same for all the areas around Bristol. Bristol's a city, but it's actually surrounded by rather beautiful countryside and little villages with extraordinary names. The village names in Somerset are quite entertaining, actually. There's Nempnut Throbwell. There's Chew Stoke. There's Stanton Drew. There's Hinton Blewett. And there's Temple Cloud. And this one's called Temple Cloud. I don't think about you much, but the bus stopped in Temple Cloud. The bus to Wells, leaving the city for the countryside. Temple Cloud. A street of houses, two pubs, and the fields behind ploughed. It was November. A few leaves left. 12 years ago, you were 28. And I was a single mum with no money and not much hope. And you drove lorries, but you weren't a lorry driver, you said. No, you were the tribe of one, a traveller in your own head. And you lived in one room in Totterdown. And you had a stammer. And you had it bad. You coughed and wiggled and shook to get the words out. A strange dance. Blue eyes, ruffled hair, a slip of a man with big hands. When the children were asleep, I crept down to you. You made me soup and we drank it in bed in cups. We watched Dad's Army and the late night films. You didn't sleep. You never slept. You sang me John Martin songs. And I told you about my dreams. A tree on an island in a lake. A temple in a desert, a cloud that sang. You said, you're the best thing. I said, you're bonkers. And you were. You smoked dope for breakfast, dropped acid for lunch, drove like a maniac, danced like a madman, hated schedules. That Christmas, when the children went to their dad's, we went to Solihull. Your mum invited us. the car broke down. We turned up well past midnight. Your family was still up, sitting there, arms folded. You've let us down again, and it went on for 4 days. Your sister contradicted everything you said. Your other sister sulked. Your brother started play fights that weren't play. Your mother said, "So when are you going to get a proper job and be respectable?" said your dad. You couldn't answer. You couldn't speak. You shook and coughed and waved your hands. At night we slept on the mattress in the dining room. "Families are hell," I said. "But yours is worse." You shook your head. You love them. And now you live in Temple Cloud. In that 60s bungalow. Or in one of those stone cottages by the road. And what do you do in Temple Cloud? Do you still drive lorries? Your girlfriend doesn't work. I heard she had a breakdown and you look after her. What do you do in Temple Cloud? Do you go down the pub? Do you walk up the lanes? Do you still sing John Martin songs? May you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you never make your bed out in the cold. Poetry doesn't exist in a vacuum. I mean, I did do an English literature degree, a BA in an American literature, so I do have a sort of a background in the traditional poets. I do read poetry. I'm often surprised about people who write poetry and they don't read it. Contemporary poets that I read, well, ones who are still alive, Wendy Cope, Carol Ann Duffy, Jackie Kay, Don Patterson, Seamus Heaney, Tim Liardé, one of my fellow lecturers at Boston University. Myself, I think it's important as a poet to keep reading poetry, and because I'm a performance poet, to also keep seeing other performance poets do their work. I've been several times over to the States, to America, because they've got a very strong tradition of performance poetry over there, and the slam tradition, and there's some very inspiring poets, people like Taylor Marley, Talar Macy, Mahogany Brown, Jive Poetic. All these people possibly haven't had a lot of material published, but certainly they do the most amazing live performances. Performance poetry is becoming global. Just in Europe, there's a massive performance poetry scene in Germany, rather strangely, and there's a burgeoning one in France, headed by a guy called Guy Cormel, who does jazz rap, which I think is quite interesting. People say to me, "Where is your work published?" I mean, I have got work published in a few collections, the Short Fuse anthology I'm in, and also the Velocity anthology. But most of the time, my work is actually on CDs because I want people to actually listen to me say the poems. And what I'm aiming to do is to have my CDs actually on my website so people can download my work and listen to it, you know, whenever they want, which is pretty much what I would like. This next poem is also looking at sort of my own personal history. I was brought up with a big family, 5 children, and we were Catholics. There's not a big Catholic community in the UK. It's a small community. And as my family kept reminding me, we were English Catholics rather than Irish Catholics or Italian Catholics or Polish Catholics. So, you know, again, the English Catholic community is even smaller. So we were brought up to feel that we were special. And this is about growing up as a Catholic. It's called Family Prayers. God bless Mama and God bless Dada, and God bless Toby, Lucy, Mary, Emily and Katie, and make them good. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. What's a womb? Shush, Mary, we'll tell you later. Put your hands together and pray. Look, Lucy's doing it properly. Yes, I'm doing it properly because this is family prayers and I'm praying. I'm praying for us all to be good. God bless Toby and make him a good boy and pass his exams. God bless Lucy and make her nearly as clever as Toby. And God bless Mary and make her do a singing practice. And God bless Emily and make her reading get better. And God bless Katie and make she grow up properly because there's something slightly wrong with her. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy will be done, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. My father, sitting on the bed, not kneeling on the floor like the rest of us because he has a bad knee, his voice booming straight up to God, forgive us our trespasses. What's a trespasses? Shush, Mary. We'll tell you later. Put your hands together and close your eyes and pray. Look, Lucy's doing it properly. Yes, I'm doing it properly. I'm kneeling on the floor in my pyjamas, dressing gown and slippers. And there's that smell of shampoo, talcum powder and warm baby milk and hot water bottles. Katie in her cot is nearly asleep now. My mother is wearing her apron and my red dressing gown has little buttons like ladybirds. And even when I close my eyes, I can still feel them. And I'm praying. God bless Toby and make him pass his exams. God bless me and may I get a bike for Christmas. I don't think I'm supposed to ask for that. And God bless Mary and I hope she gets bubonic plague and I hate her. I don't think I'm supposed to ask for that either. Hail Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy. Hail our life, our sweetness and our hope. To thee do we cry, poor banished children of Eve, mourning and weeping in this vale of tears. I'm praying because we are the poor banished children of Eve, banished to Katie's bedroom to pray every night. And I'm praying for wars to stop. I'm praying for the starving babies in Africa. I'm praying for Grandpa to get better. I'm praying for us all to be good. I'm praying so hard that if I close my eyes tighter, surely I can feel my own guardian angel standing right beside me. And surely, surely I can feel the faint rustle of his huge, resting rainbow wings. Family prayers, every night before bedtime. Even when I was 15, even when I was 16. God bless Mama and God bless Dada and God bless Toby making pass his exams and God bless Lucy and make her a good girl, especially now she's got a boyfriend and God bless Mary and stop her wearing makeup to school and God bless Emily and may her reading get better and God bless Katie and let's hope she learns to talk. And God bless Uncle Stan and Auntie Topsy and Auntie Blanche and Uncle Ron and Uncle Will and Alfred George and Mrs. Bassett and Tommy, Mr. Kovacevich. And may they rest in peace. And God bless Grandma and the other Grandma and John Dodsworth, who is only 15, and Auntie Jo and Dada and Jane's baby. And may they rest in peace. Eternal rest give unto them, O Lord. And let perpetual light shine upon them, and may they rest in peace. Amen. Doing performance poetry is fun. You go to events, they're usually in cafes, they're usually in bars. And what I love about being a performance poet, you know, I don't even have to be myself. I can sort of put on a persona. When I did the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with Big Word, I got called the hippie chick love mother sex goddess, which I think is quite funny. And I sometimes use that strap line in my publicity. I like to dress up when I'm performing. I like to wear sort of extravagant and sort of brightly coloured clothes and be the sort of poetry slut. So this last poem is very much in that spirit. It's the spirit of slam, it's the spirit of the poetry whore, it's the spirit of me as the hippie chick love mother sex goddess. Okay, I mean, these days I'm a bit more like the hippie chick love mother sex grandma, but you know, it's still there inside me. This is called Let Me Be. Let me be, let me be, let me be your slut. You know the one you ring up when you've had a row with your girlfriend And you go round and see her, and there she is, in a top that's too tight and a skirt that's too short and bare legs. And you can have her. You can have her. You can have her on the stairs and on the bathroom and on the bog. You can have her anywhere. Let me be. Let me be. Let me be your drunk slut. You know, the one who's been hanging around the bar all evening with that hungry look on her face, and now it's closing time and you're the last decent cock that still works. And here she comes, a bit unsteady, and here she comes a bit old and faded. But you don't care. You don't care because you've had 8 pints of Otterhead to cloud your judgment, and besides, you're up for it. So you ask her home, but you don't actually get there. You land up in an alleyway that smells of cider and piss and elderflowers, and there you are shagging her against a fence in a tangle of pulled down pants and trousers. And when you do get home, you fall asleep straight away in a chair, and you don't hear her flitting around your house like a trapped bird. Let me be, let me be, let me be your mad, drunk slut. You know the one who rings you up 20 times a day, even when you're at work. You know the one who sends you 6 love letters a week and then runs screaming after you because she saw you going into a shop with another woman. You know the one who's always hanging outside that bush outside your front door, so when you open your door, you're never quite sure whether she's there or not. You know the one who's always peering into your windows. And where did you leave your binoculars? You know, the one who's so good at disguises, you're never quite sure whether she's that old lady walking a dog, whether she's that old man with a beard on the bus. You know, the one who stands outside your front door for an hour in the rain. Until you let her in, until you let her in, until you let her in, just so that you can talk to her, just so that you can say to her, please leave me alone. But somehow it never gets to that. Somehow it's always the same. It's you on the sofa with your pants down and one thought going through your head. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no. Oh yes. Let me be. Let me be. Let me be your evil, mad, drunk slut. Because she's so mad, she knows exactly what she's doing. She's getting through to you. She's getting through to you. She's getting through to you. She's becoming you. She is you. And you cannot extinguish her. You cannot extinguish her, no matter how hard you thrust, like the moth that flies into the candle again and again, fizzling with desire as you burn in the flame of your crafty, evil, mad, drunk slut. Your angel.
And here in Poetica on ABC Radio National, we've been listening to the poetry of Lucy English. Lucy was interviewed in the UK by Anna Messeriti. The sound engineer was Tom Henry, and production today was by Anna Messeriti and Christina Kubiak. Lucy English has released her work on a CD called Family Prayers, and her most recent book is Why I'm Here. Check out our website for further details. I'm Mike Ladd. I hope you can join me next week for the latest in our series about poets working with sound. Poetica has been running this series for over a decade now, featuring collaborations between poets, spoken word artists and musicians. That's Audiophile Poets number 10, next week on Poetica. Coming up soon is Lingua Franca.